Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Greetings, music nerds, and welcome to Season 7 of the Music Makers and Soul Shakers podcast. I'm your host, Steve Dawson, coming to you from the Hen House Studio here in East Nashville, Tennessee. I'm so glad you've chosen to join me once again as we take some deep dives with a cast of wonderful musicians, producers, and engineers that I've managed to track down and speak to about making music, records, and just doing what they do in their lives in music. Don't forget, there's a link to a playlist on Spotify and Apple Music with links to many of the songs we discuss on today's episode. You'll find links to those playlists in the show notes below or at our website. Meanwhile, the show continues to be largely listener-supported. Your help in keeping the show going is always appreciated, and you can do it with a one-time donation or a Patreon subscription, which is a monthly payment of your choice. And when you sign up for Patreon, you get an ad-free version of the show to listen to, as well as getting entered to win a cunning prize pack from our sponsors at the end of the season. Or if you're tight for dough and you still want to help out, you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just by spreading the word, sharing the show, following us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook, and telling all your pals about it. You can get links to all this stuff at makersandshakerspodcast.com. Meanwhile, a huge thanks to the sponsors this season. Please check them out and let them know I sent you. They are Union Tube and Transistor, Spectra 1964, The Deering Banjo Company, Mule Resophonic Guitars, and The Hen House Hang. All right, thanks so much to you for tuning in, and let's get down to it. Howdy, music nerds. Welcome to the show. This is episode number 150. That's crazy. 150. Cool. My guest today is a great guitar player. He's a singer and a songwriter, Mr. Dwayne Betts. Thanks for tuning in. I sure appreciate everyone listening and coming back to hang. And it's a really hot, it's like the last hot day here in Nashville, apparently. It's like, for you Canadians out there, it's 30 degrees in October. That's pretty hot. And for you Americans, I have no idea. I can never do the whole thing about the Fahrenheit thing. I'm too Canadian, I guess. So it's 30 Celsius here in October, and then tomorrow it's going to chill out. So there you go. And we just wrapped up the Hen House Hang here for 2023 this week, and it was so fun and really rewarding experience. We had a group of folks in the studio here for 3 days. I brought in a band of killer players and an amazing artist named Maya Devitri, who I'm sure some of you out there know. She was in a band called The Stray Birds, and she now records under her own name. And we worked on her songs in front of people and explained the process as it unfolded, and it was really cool and fun. And we got into the mixing process as well, and basically took it from where everyone heard the songs for the first time to an almost finished track. Anyway, thanks so much to everyone that attended. It was really cool to have a room full of people here. And I know some of those folks are listeners of the show and probably heard about it here. And if you're interested in such things, we'll be doing it again in September of 2024. The dates aren't quite firm yet, but stay tuned for that in the next week or so. You can find info over at stevedawson.ca. Also, just a reminder that we'll be giving away a bunch of cool prizes from our sponsors at the end of the season, including some killer Union Tube and Transistor pedals. You just have to be a Patreon subscriber to be entered, and the winner will be picked from there. Just head over to the Makers and Shakers podcast page, and you can sign up. Hit the donate button, and you can sign up either for Patreon or a one-time donation. But any and all Patreon subscribers will be automatically entered into the contest for some swag, including wicked guitar pedals. So you can get on that if you want to. And just a shout out to a new Patreon member this week who was generous enough to help support the show. So thank you to Edward Gagnon. Okay, so on the show today is Dwayne Betts. Dwayne, of course, is the son of the innovative guitarist and songwriter and singer from the Allman Brothers band, Dickie Betts. And he sure does look like his old man, too. Dwayne has his own thing going on, though, and he's finally just released his debut solo album called Wild and Precious Life. It's a really cool record, and I wanted to talk to him about that process. It's sort of a modern take on Southern rock, sort of, but it's unique and definitely has some of the Betts family sound to it, but it's also a great display of a killer band in fine form. Before Dwayne was writing and singing his own songs, he was a guitar slinger for hire and spent some time in the band Dawes, who I'm sure lots of people know. He played with Phil Lesh and friends, and he's had other bands like Backbone 69 and a band with some of the other Allman Brothers band offspring, including Barry Oakley Jr. and Devin Allman, called the Allman Betts Band. And those were cool projects too. But I can imagine, you know, the weight of that situation would be pretty heavy when you're trying to do your own thing and your dad's in a really famous band. So I get why that would probably be a bit much sometimes, and you know, wanting to strike out on your own and forge your own path. And that's what Dwayne has done this year. So we get into the new record quite a bit, Wild and Precious Life, and talk about the process. He recorded it over at Derek Trucks and Susan Tedeschi's studio just last year, I guess. And there's a lot to talk about with that whole process. I've only seen Dwayne live just one time, really recently, at the Grand Ole Opry. And he and his band did a great little mini set there. But they are going to be out playing all over the country and probably all over the world in the coming months, promoting this new record. So make sure you go out and see them live and pick up the new album. It's awesome. And you can get info on all the dates over at DwayneBetts.com. And with that, please enjoy my conversation with Dwayne Betts. Well, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. I saw you at the Opry, I don't know, 2 months ago or whatever. That must have been, that must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was really great. Yeah, really, really fun and such an honor to be a part of it and play my songs, you know, on that stage and stand up there. And, you know, I mean, it was definitely a little throw and go, you know, you just kind of show up and you play the song once at rehearsal and it's just, that's what it is. And then you go up there and do it. But that's kind of, I'm kind of accustomed to that. So you just roll with it.
I'm always curious about that process. Like, do they try and encourage you to use the house band, or do you have to put your foot down and say, no, I'm using my guys? Or are they just like, yeah, whatever you want?
No, I didn't have to put my foot down. I think they're there. If you need them, they're there, and they want to make it really clear that they're there to help. And they probably would like to incorporate some of their band, but I can't speak for them. But, no, it wasn't, there was no pushback at all. I used a combination of my band and their band. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So it worked out well.
Maybe we can dive into this. You know, this podcast it's sort of focused on making records, but among other things as well. And that's something that you've done a lot of over the last 20 years. But just recently, you've completed and released your really what's, I guess, officially your first solo record.
Yeah, it would be my first, you know, full length.
Yeah.
You know.
So Wild and Precious Life, and I'm wondering if we could talk a bit about that. I guess before we talk about the specifics, because I'd like to hear, I know you made it at Derek Trucks' place, but I'd love to talk about the specifics of the session. But also, I guess before we do that, the one thing that really jumps out to me, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but like the whole, I don't know if there's a better term for it, but like the family sound that you have with, you know, what you've picked up from Dickie and the way that you've incorporated into your own music without seeming like a imitation. It's sort of like doing your own thing, but it's clearly like you're wearing that influence on your sleeve as well. And I'm just wondering how you kind of reconcile that in your own playing and, you know, finding a way to do that, but also to have your own voice and your own artistry in a project like this.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I listen to a lot of music. I listen to music that doesn't sound like what I play. I listen to like there's a girl, Kate LeBon, who I've been listening to, who it's like kind of 80s Bowie, like art gallery, like New York, like it's very like avant-garde, you know? And so I like a lot of stuff that isn't, you know, roots, Southern soul, you know, like Allman Brothers sounding stuff. But, the way I play is kind of who I am. I mean, I just, I don't hide from it. I mean, I definitely like a lot of music from my generation that my dad doesn't like. But when it comes to the way I play, I mean, I just play the way I play. And if I'm playing the way I play, it probably sounds a lot like the way my dad plays, you know, because that's kind of a natural, that's kind of a part of that's genetic and kind of an intangible quality that, you know, your musical instincts and kind of the way you hit the string and the way you phrase and that stuff, that's not stuff that you learn from records, because then other people would sound like that. And a lot of people try to sound like that. And it's just, there's just kind of a way that he plays that I'm not saying I play like him or I'm on that level. I'm not saying anybody is. But definitely I don't try to not sound like, you know, on something like on the new record, Waiting on a Song, for instance, that's probably the thing that sounds most like my dad. And
right.
And
that could be straight off like Great Southern or Brothers and Sisters something, you know,
that
like,
could be off of, you know, that kind of has a little bit of a Highway Call thing.
Totally.
Little,
yeah.
Know, sounds a little bit like a Ramblin' Man type of thing. And we just wanted to do some cool kind of classic kind of, put some pedal steel on it and get it down home and sounding kind of like a, you know, I mean, we kind of used Highway Call as a model, like a long time gone type of thing. So, that's probably the thing that sounds most like my dad. But yeah, I mean, I just don't really worry about it, about sounding too much like my dad or, you know, I mean, my influences are my influences, but
yeah.
But when it comes to songwriting and stuff, I mean, there's probably a lot of songs that I have that I'm gonna play. I mean, there's definitely room to bring in some different influences, you know. And I think on the next record, I mean, I'm not looking too far ahead, but when I start writing for the next one, I kind of have an idea of maybe how to follow it up and do something that keeps the that kind of family sound, as you're talking about, intact, more kind of modern, you know, kind of modern classic. And that's what I try to do, you know, is do stuff that's classic sounding, that's retro root sounding, but that there's something in it that can, it sounds fresh, you know?
Yeah. That's what I get from that for sure.
Yeah.
We will get to that session, but like along the way, you're not a kid anymore. Like you've been around for quite a while playing guitar for different bands and backing people up and, both, you know, some with your dad and then with like Dawes and the other bands that you've had and Allman Family Revival and all that stuff. I'm just wondering how that transition has been to, I don't know if you've all that time, if you've had your own project going under your own name, but if not, how have you found the transition into being like a band leader, say from being a sideman for a band like Dawes?
Yeah. So I never made, I never sang, you know, I was always a guitar player. So I sang just enough to kind of, when I'd write a song and I was relaying it to whoever was going to sing the song, I could kind of sing it, fake sing it to them to where they would sing it. But I didn't start singing until I was, you know, well into my 30s, probably my late 30s.
No kidding.
That's why I never made records of my songs, of me singing my songs, because I never was a singer. So it's a pretty simple explanation for that. But
yep.
But playing with you know, and playing with other bands and like working with Dawes, that, you know, that was obviously really an amazing experience for me. And I learned a lot and, you know, got to meet a lot of artists that I really respect. You know, that's one thing about playing with them is they play with a lot of like-minded artists and they're all really gifted, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really cool. Playing with my dad, same thing, a different approach. I mean, my dad kind of looks for things out of his band that maybe other people don't look for. Maybe things that are important to my dad, and things that aren't as important to him. Maybe those other things that aren't important are really important. If you're doing another gig, you better have that down. And, you know, whereas he is more interested in the improvisation and just the vibe of it. I mean, obviously you have to learn the songs and play the songs too, but, so then forming, you know, then of course we did the Allman Betts band, we did two records. And so that was kind of my first, other than being a kid, the bands I was in when I was like in my early 20s, those bands were just, I mean, we were kids then. So it was just, yeah, we were partying and it was a democracy and no one was working for anybody. I mean, we didn't have any money. We just were kind of living the dream, as living they the say. Dream, man. You know, when I was in Southern California and I was 21 years old, I wasn't thinking about any of that. I mean, you know, but I certainly wasn't working for anybody either. So fast forwarding to the Allman Betts band, that was probably, you know, Devin and I put that together and we were more or less the band leaders, you know.
Did you grow up around Devin? Like, were you guys pals when you were like little kids, or was it not?
No, I didn't meet Devin until he didn't meet his father until he was in his teens. That's like common knowledge, but so I'm not like divulging anything that, you know, he wouldn't want me to divulge, but he and I met on the 1989 reunion tour, the Allman Brothers Band, 20th anniversary tour, the Dreams tour. They had put out a box set.
I saw that tour.
Many of those older bands were putting out box sets and doing 20th anniversary tours. Now that's like over 30 years ago.
Yeah, now you need a 30th anniversary tour of that.
But that's where I met him, and that's where I met Barry Oakley, you know, Barry Duane Oakley. And we never lived in the same town. We'd see each other in passing, you know, over the years. And then we formed the Allman Betts Band. We did two records. We're proud of those records and toured around the world. And so that was kind of my first experience being in the driver's seat of like a band that was actually like working and actually supporting itself.
Was there any trepidation on your part, like to do a band like that, that there's no way around the specter of the Allman Brothers Band when you have a band called what that band was called and containing those people?
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like a natural step. I mean, it felt right. And I mean, I always have a little trepidation about all of that stuff, but like you say, you can't really get around. I mean, the nostalgia kind of, when you get me and Barry and Dwayne, I mean, and Devin together, I mean, those older people, I mean, and rightfully so, I'm not discrediting it, but the nostalgia kind of comes up for them and they see us all on stage and it reminds, you know, so I don't, not that that's a bad thing. But there's something about doing my band that that kind of is tamed down a little bit, which totally. I kind of like to get away from that a little bit.
Yeah. I would imagine that's a big relief in a way.
But everybody, you know, I mean, people are gonna, they have their stories and they have their memories of, you know, when there's some older people that have been to, you know, they won't tell you, and they will, they'll tell you their story, and they pretty much all do. And I joke about it, from stage, like, you know, when I'm in a good mood, I'll say something. Now, if I come out to the merch booth, you know, I know y'all are going to tell me your stories. It's kind of borderline, like making them feel like bad about it before they get to do it. But it's like,
it probably saves yourself like 2 hours of time at the merch
booth. Well, sometimes it's fun to walk the line and kind of put things in perspective for them too. And so you kind of can meet halfway and be reasonable about it.
Yeah.
But no, but I mean, everybody's generally, you know, that 99% of the time, I mean, that's totally respectful. You know, it's just every now and then it can get, you know, where people want to tell you about your family. Like, let me tell you, let me tell you about you and your family. And that's like, okay, how about,
I was on the road a bit with Amy Helm, and man, as you can imagine, just like night after night, she was very gracious about it, but like being told about her dad for, if it went unchecked, it would have gone on for like 3 hours every single night.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm joking around, but I'm so appreciative to those folks have like supported our family's music and support my music, support, you know, all of our music. So yeah. They're music lovers and they love great music. And without talking infinity about it, I mean, you said something. I mean, the Allman Brothers Band, you know, that music is just great music, and it's, you can't really get around it. I mean, it's just this big yeah. thing, you know, that's like, it's not, it's something to be proud of, you know, rather than be like, oh man, you know, my dad was in this big band and like,
for sure.
I have to like worry about what I do compared, like, you know, you can't do that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about recording this record. How did it come about in the first place? And like, tell me about your band. So is Barry Dwayne Oakley, right? That's his
name. Yeah.
Is he currently in your band, and did he play on the record?
Barry is on the record, and he's not currently playing with me.
Okay.
But he was a huge part of the record
yeah.
and did a fantastic job. Johnny Stachula is who's my guitar partner. He was a huge part of it. I mean, I can just go through and list everybody. John Ginty, Johnny Stachula. John Ginty on keys, Johnny Stachula.
Johnny is the one that I saw playing slide with you at the Opry, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And Barry were all with me in the Allman Betts band.
Right.
So, and then I recruited, I asked Tyler Greenwell from Tedeschi Trucks Band if he would be interested in playing drums on it, and he was very interested, and he's one of my favorite drummers, and he's just
so
awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wanted to put a band together with people I was comfortable with, that kind of knew where I was coming from already, that we could work efficiently, and that most importantly would sound great together. And I knew that, I knew how Ginty played. I knew how Stachula played. I knew how Barry played, and I knew that Barry and Falcon, Tyler Greenwell, as we call him Falcon, would sound, I thought they would sound great together. And
had they played together before?
No. That was the first time they played together in the studio. And the session came about, I was at a friend's birthday party down in the Keys, and Derek and Susan were there. We have a mutual friend. And we were just having small talk, and they were asking what I was up to, what my plans were. And I told them that I really wanted to record a record. I had songs I'd been writing during the pandemic, and I was pretty close to being ready to go. And Susan immediately told me that I should record the record at their studio. So that's how it came about. It kind of all fell into place, you know?
So is that studio somewhere that you'd been or worked before, or?
No, I'd never been to their house. It's on their property at their house. So it's a separate structure.
They're like outside of Atlanta somewhere?
Jacksonville.
Oh, they're in
outside
Jacksonville.
Of Jacksonville.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I'd never been there. And yeah, I mean, it was everything that I thought it would be and more. Yeah, it was really relaxed, a really relaxed environment, plenty of space, you know.
At this point in the show, I'd like to thank our amazing sponsors for the season. We couldn't do it without their support, and this year they are Mule Resophonics. Swing wider for inspiration with Mule Resophonic guitars. These are Resophonic guitars built for acoustic guitar players. Not just blues guitars, not just slide guitars. You don't need to play them in open tunings. They're set up with normal acoustic guitar action, and they have some of the best feeling necks in the game. Trust me, they're wicked. These musical tools wake up your ear and influence your playing towards uncharted musical realms. Check out the current lineup of guitars at the Mule Store at muleresophonic.com. Thanks to Spectra 1964. For over 50 years, Spectra 1964 has established a reputation of creating some of the most innovative recording equipment on the market today. Their consoles and preamps were behind the sound of so many great American studios of the 1960s through to today. Spectra 1964 continues the legacy of providing incredible recording products for the home or professional studio. Check them out at spectra1964.com. Union Tube and Transistor. Union is known for guitar effects pedals with a focus on quality and simplicity. They build durable, repairable products that sound amazing both on stage and in the studio. Their fuzz effects and compression pedals are insanely cool. I used the Sonebender Fuzz, the Moore pedal, the Lab, and the Swindle Overdrive all the time in sessions and live on stage. You can find out more about them at uniontone.com. And finally, the Henhouse Hang is a 3-day immersive recording experience at the Henhouse Studio in East Nashville with me, Steve Dawson. It'll be in September 2023 and then upcoming again in September of 2024. Join us for a musical learning experience like no other. We'll show you the ropes of recording roots in Americana music by bringing you in on a real session with real musicians working on real songs from the ground up. You can get all the info at stevedawson.ca. Just follow the links on the front page to the Henhouse Hang. All right then, let's get back to the show. What's the studio actually like? Is it just sort of like one big room with a control room, or is it sectioned off, or what's the vibe in there?
There's a main room, and then there's a, you know, there's a vocal booth and a couple, I think there's a couple little booths, but, and then a little control room, but I think they're actually redoing it. I think they're probably in the process right now of expanding it to make the control room a little bigger, because the control room was a little small, but it's just really, really a beautiful piece of property. So you can walk out in nature on this long dock that kind of goes through a swamp out to a river.
Oh, wow.
And that part of it's really nice when you're recording to just go out.
Totally.
And you know, even if you're still working on a song, you know, and you're almost done with a song and you need to finish it up, you know, just getting out of the studio.
Clear your head a little bit.
Yeah. Going and taking a walk, but
yeah, I know what that's like,
but yeah, it was really a great place. And they were kind of like in the wing, you know, they'd come in, pop in every now and then just to check on it, but they weren't like,
hovering.
You know, they weren't grading us or anything, you know, there was no pressure.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
They don't open that place up to people that much, do they? Like,
there's a couple people that they don't, it's not like open to the public or anything.
Yeah.
They do all their records there, and they do, I think they've done a few other things, but I mean, it's basically like they ask you to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And is there an engineer there that works there full time that you used, or did you bring a guy in, or how did that work?
Bobby Tees, lives down the street, and that's their guy. I mean, Bobby's amazing.
Yeah.
Jim Scott mixed it out in California. Scott's obviously Grammy award winning. He's phenomenal. So the record has, I mean, it's a fantastic sounding record, and
it is.
I'm really pleased with the way it turned out, on pretty much all levels. You know, I mean, the artwork came together very organically and naturally. You know, my wife was looking for putting together an inspiration board for new merch and kind of going off of the vibe of the music. And, you know, we'd been writing a lot down at my dad's house in Florida, and then we were recording in Florida, and the songs kind of had this, you know, my family, I grew up there, my dad grew up there, my grandfather grew up there, you know, so we're kind of a line of Floridians. But she came across this painting, and the artist was Pierre Richard, is French gentleman who moved over to Florida from around 1930 and started painting Florida landscapes. We kind of were drawn to it. And then we did some research, and a friend of mine who loved it as well, when we showed him, tracked it down and did the research, found who owned it now. And then that person lived like 15 minutes from my dad's house.
Oh, really?
Ironically.
Weird.
Yeah. So we just got in touch with him and asked and told him what we were up to, and it's not copyrighted. So, I mean, we just needed his permission, and if you look in the record, there's a thank you note, and it lists his website for his other book. And so that was how that all came about. But it's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, that's nice. So did you guys all set up? Like, it sounds like it's done pretty live and, you know, there's a lot of interplay and all that stuff. Were you guys pretty much set up as a band, and did you perform that way?
Yeah. we played live and added stuff that needed, you know, some of the stuff I would record in electric live.
Yeah.
And get solo live with the band when I felt like it needed to be live. And then there was other stuff that was more based around the acoustic.
Yeah.
That I cut the acoustic live with the band.
Yeah.
And then went back electric afterwards. Some of those songs like Circles in the Stars.
Yeah.
Songs where the electrics don't come in until after the song started.
Right.
Kind of made more sense to overdub the electrics. But yeah, like Waiting on a Song, that jam and that's cut live.
Wicked.
I spent time on these solo, like I wanted, if I felt like I could beat a live solo, I would go back in.
Yeah.
But when they're long, I like to try to get a live take, you know?
Yeah. Give it a bit of life with the band and have them react.
So the band's moving together. And I mean, you can get a great version. What, you know, you might get part of it live and then go back in and have to redo part of it. But, you know, there's no rules, but yeah, the general idea was to go in and cut it live. And we cut to tape to 2-inch, and then, just get it right.
There's an interesting thing that you do in your melodic sort of lead playing that kind of reminds me of your dad in a way that the solos a lot of the time to me sound almost composed, but maybe not completely. Do you spend time like kind of working some of that stuff out, or do you wing it, or what's your, like I'm really curious about, because they sound very melodic and like almost like a composed thing.
I pretty much wing it. I mean, okay. The idea is to write the melodies on the spot.
Okay.
That's what I'm really like. When I'm really in a zone, or I feel like I'm in a zone, yeah. You know, I feel like I'm playing melody and not playing just like stuff
notes.
That's in a, yeah, that's like in a book that I have in my head that I've played.
Yeah.
I play a lot of licks too. I mean, I go, but a lot of time, when I'm kind of trying to get my foundation sturdy, like in a live show,
yep.
When I'm trying to feel out the stage for how it sounds and I'm trying to get comfortable on stage, if I'm not comfortable already, I'll kind of set it by playing stuff I'm comfortable with. And then as I get more comfortable, the idea is to kind of get away from thinking about what you've played before and just kind of play melody. But to answer your question directly, you know, there's stuff that I'll give it a try. Like Saints to Sinners, I went back in and recut that solo, and I finally got it. I did like two takes, and I was like, I'd listen back and like, no, that's not it. I need to do something more fiery. I need to keep that going. So in that sense, it's kind of composed because you're listening to what you just did that was on right. The spot.
Yeah.
And maybe, then you're maybe. Changing it relative to that, and you might play something that was in that again. So yeah, it's, you know, it can be a little composed, but no, it's pretty much off the top of the head, a lot of that stuff.
That's cool.
The line in Circles in the Stars that I play at the end, that's definitely composed.
Yeah.
But I composed it, like I played it on the demo, I played it without composing it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I wrote that melody, is beautiful. I want to play it. That's what it needs to do. Like
right.
When I go and record it, you know, I need to play that again. So, but that's more or less that sounds like a little really simple, like a lullaby melody that, you know, and
yeah.
That sometimes that's the stuff I'm most proud of, is the
totally.
Stuff that's like just a really simple melody.
So you mentioned that song Saints to Sinners. So when you approach, like that's got a lot of guitar harmony stuff on it. When you approach that stuff, what's your process? So that's you, and like you work that out with, like, do you write both parts, or do you bring it in and just start messing around until you have a harmony going with whoever else is playing the other part, or like how do you approach that stuff?
Yeah. So great. Yeah. These are great questions. Like I'm like, really, I like answering these. These are cool.
Oh, that's good.
yeah. Yeah. Cause it makes me think, and it's,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So my songwriting partner, Stahl Vaughn, I co-wrote a lot of these songs with him.
Okay.
And some of the tunes, like, sometimes I'll have an idea and I can't really get it going past a certain extent. I'll give it to him and he'll get it going. Other times I'll have a finished song, but I know it's not right. I know it needs editing. He'll edit it. And other times we'll just start from scratch together.
Yep. Is he somebody that lives close by that you're physically around?
He's somebody. So I met Stahl and I've written for him with him for about over 10 years now. We met around 2012 in Los Angeles. And he's from Kentucky and he lives back in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
So he's a Kentuckian, but he and I write really well together, and he was pushing for the guitar harmonies, and it became a theme where it was like, man, it needs a hook, it needs put a cool guitar harp, you know, and he'd get me to come up with one. And then it just became a theme to where, okay, well, we're going, let's just go all the way. Let's, you know, I mean, there's guitar harmonies on more than half of the songs on the record.
So walk me through what you actually do. So do you sit there with an iPhone and you write like a part quickly and then just come up with another part, or like what's the first stage when he says, hey, this needs a thing? You come up with this thing. It sounds great. How did you get from A to B?
You know, like in Saints to Sinners, you brought up the middle part. I had it going from, you know, I had a section written and I didn't have a harmony there. And he said, let's put a melody there. And then I don't know where I came up, if I came up with it right there, or if it was later that night while I was playing acoustic guitar in my bedroom, but I came up with the melody. And then when it came to do the harmony, then you have choices. You can do thirds, you can do fifths. So then that's when I need Johnny and we'll work on it together, and I'll have him play the different choices, and I'll hear the different melodies, and I'll say, no, play that. I mean, that's one thing I am good at is I have a pretty good ear and I can hear notes. I hear harmony really well. I can tell what's going to sound good without hearing it with what I'm playing.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of give him direction, and then he might throw in something, but I pretty much direct it, get him to play the choices, and then we decide together what we like better, and we always agree.
Okay.
We always agree. So on Saints to Sinners, we had a couple options, and we both agreed on what it became. Now, on the other thing, Colors Fade, that's his melody.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, you know, the obvious harmony that sounds good is thirds, I guess, whatever we play together is probably the one that sounds better. So you just play what sounds better. Sometimes it can be difficult to pick. And frankly, other times you don't have to play succinct like harmony. You can, like, one thing that's interesting about Duane Allman's parts is when he was in the Allman Brothers band, some of his harmonies, like on Dreams, didn't follow in a direct line with the melody.
Right.
So those parts kind of crisscross and they're not properly direct harmonic, like in the same path, you know?
Yeah.
So, which is really cool. So you don't want to get too proper about it, but yeah, the melody on Colors Fade, Johnny had, and, you know, I mean, some of the other stuff, like in Waiting on Song, we worked some of that stuff out together, like in the middle section where it modulates up to D. I don't know. I don't want to get too into musical terms, but
it's all right. We're all nerdy here.
Yeah. But I mean, all that stuff is really fun because by that point you have the song, the hard part is done.
Right. You know, right. So this is the icing on the cake part.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's just the fun. That's the fun stuff.
So you never come at it with like, I got this wicked guitar harmony thing. Let's write a song about it. It's always the other way around for you.
On this, to my knowledge on this record. Yeah. The only stuff that I have that the harmony, well, the instrumental Under the Bally Moon.
Under the Bally Moon is the instrumental.
Yeah. I mean that stuff I wrote, and that's one of my favorite tracks on the record. And that stuff is more, I had a lot of parts that were for that song that weren't used. And Falcon really, he went through everything and edited what I had.
Like different sections to the piece?
Well, yeah, he, there was a part, the main theme in that song, I only had it as the intro, and it wasn't in time yet. It was like a pre where the song, where the time actually starts. But I had the melody, I had the chords, and he was like, "That's your part. Like you need to have that recur."
Yeah.
You know. And then he got rid of, and I was so thankful, and I was so happy because it turned out so much better than what I had. What I had was like a mere, you know, was a shadow of what it became. So
well, that's a good way to flesh stuff out with like a full band sitting there, and you're doing kind of.
Well, it took all day. We were in the studio. It was in the middle of the session, and we were like, okay, we don't know what's going to happen with this one, but let's work on it. And it took all day. And
did you always intend for that to be an instrumental, or were you like toying with that being okay?
Yeah, that was an instrumental, and I had it going a few other places, and it was a little much, and it was a little like pseudo Latin, the way it originally was, and he added a really hip drum beat and kind of got it away from that, and
yeah, it's a great groove,
you know. Yeah, and the title fit, you know. I was like, well, we can't call it that because it kind of sounds Latin. That's like, and then the way it turned out, it doesn't sound Latin. So
yeah,
the title fits much better now.
Yeah. So on a tune like Cold Dark World, that's the one that Marcus King's on. There's who's playing the guitar in the intro? Is that you or Marcus? Do you remember? That's you. Is that guitar plugged straight into the console?
No, that's. No, it's that's a different sound though. No, I have
that's a wicked guitar sound, but it sounded to me super direct. But I guess I'm wrong.
It's a fuzz pedal turned low.
Oh, okay.
With the gain turned low, and I was kind of going for like a funkadelic kind of
nice,
like I don't know, some of the stuff that J.D. Simo does. I was kind of Yeah, I just wanted to get a little bit different sound on that. I mean, I hardly use any effects. I mean, that's pretty much it. So
let's talk a little bit about your guitar sound, like a little bit about how it's evolved through your career. But anytime I've seen you, you're pretty much playing a gold top. Is that like, that's got to be your main axe, right?
I mean, I really love playing the 335. There was a 335 I was playing for a while, but it's so valuable that unless, you know, I really don't like to bring those out unless you have like a full guitar tech with a protective, you know, I don't like to just have those guitars loose.
Is that one of your dad's guitars or?
Yeah, it's a 1961 335, and it's the one that he played. But that guitar, I mean, it's hard to find a better sounding guitar. I played that one as my main one, as my main axe, if you will, for I don't know how long I played it, but there's a good run there with it where it was my main guitar. Mm-hmm. But the gold top sounds really really great too. And I just feel more comfortable traveling around with it, doing one-offs. And
okay.
So that's kind of my main, that's my main one.
Is it sort of an off the shelf Les Paul, or like, where does that one come from?
That one is the prototype of my dad's signature model that they did. They did a run of those like in the early 2000s, and that was like the first one they sent. So,
okay, cool.
And I had number two, but number two got, that's a long story. I won't go into it, but number two doesn't exist anymore. So
okay.
Number one,
it involves a wood chipper.
Number one is the one that I have now that he played that one for a long time, and now I've played it for quite a few years. So
okay, and it's just stock, like straight up Dickie Betts Les Paul. That's what
yeah,
it is.
I haven't done anything to it. Yeah, I mean, it okay. sounds really good. I mean, sometimes I want to change the pickups and experiment, but I'm like, I kind of get.
Hey, it's working, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, he played it like that. If it was good enough for him, it's probably good enough for me. So. Yeah.
Amps, you're kind of a super guy, right? Super reverbs all the way.
Yeah, I mean, I love a great sounding vintage, you know, blackface super reverb. I just don't know what I would like better than that. I mean, it's kind of like developed into a thing where I just kind of, that's what we go for. But on the record, I used a deluxe reverb.
Oh, okay. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's really one of Derek's. It's.
He's probably got a few amps kicking around down there.
Yeah, it's a, just a great sounding little amp. So, yeah.
Is that an adjustment period though? Because those 410s in a super is like, that's the real thing, and you're probably used to that, right?
Yeah, not really. I mean, if I was playing with a band on a stage rather than in the studio, it would be an adjustment. But
okay,
I mean, I play through it. If I can, if I'm playing a small room and they have backline there and there's a deluxe there, I'll play through a deluxe. I just played the other night. We were at a place that was also a studio and they had a ton of amps, and both Johnny and I downgraded to, he played through a deluxe, and then you put it up on a case a little bit to get it off the ground. And yeah. I played through a Vibralux.
Oh, those are cool.
So, yeah, just to bring down the power. I mean, those supers that we have, I mean, they're real supers and they're loud.
Yeah.
And they sound great, but it's just not needed for a room that small if you have another choice, you know.
So you take the old ones out with you, or do you use reissues, or what do you use on the road?
Oh, no, old ones. No, old ones. I would never play a reissue. I mean, I play reissues all the time because you have to.
Yeah.
But I would never have an old one that works and choose a reissue over it.
Right. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's a big difference. The supers to me are weird. The reissues of the supers are weird. The reissues of the Princetons I really like, but the supers, it seems like they missed the mark or something to me.
I mean, they're fine. I mean, it's what I choose. I mean, I don't pick something else.
Yeah.
They're a little inconsistent. I mean, I'd rather have a reissue than an old one that's not serviced. That's
right.
When you get trouble.
Big trouble.
When you request a vintage super and then they get it from someone who's had it sitting around and it's like the speakers are like sound like they're dead or something else is drastically wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll take a reissue any day over that. But if you have, you know, if you have a properly serviced 65, you know, blackface super,
come on,
you know, that's like, you know, that's not all messed with and made into another amp.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that people do different things to them, but yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. And I mean, for this record, I want to just keep it natural. I mean, I've been kind of playing very natural. You know,
yeah, you don't have a lot of effects or anything going on this record. It's pretty straight up.
I feel like I should bring something into the fold just to like switch it up. And I probably will at some point, but I don't want to do it just because.
Yeah.
You know, just because I feel like I have to, because I don't have to.
That Cold Dark World song with Marcus K. King, it sounds like, so you do the intro, he comes in, you sing the tune. There's a fuzz solo. Is that you on with, like, are you fuzzed out on that one?
Yeah, I'm the first one. Yeah, I'm using the fuzz. I overdubbed the solo because the way I had the pedals set for the live track, I had it turned way low to get that kind of
that intro sound.
Yeah, the intro sound and the way it sounds.
All right.
So I couldn't get the sound I wanted for the solo. I did cut the solo live, and I said I need a different sound. So yeah. I went back and recut the solo.
Okay.
And then Marcus did his stuff at his studio, and he played through it. And Johnny's on it too. So there's actually three guitar players on that. Johnny obviously does the slide at the end.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of guitars on that record, on that song, but it's cool.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And the one with Derek Trucks, the last one, what the hell is that called?
Stare
at the Sun. I assume that since you did it at his place, he was probably there for the live tracking of that, or did that not go down like that?
He was there for, we actually did that in the second session, I think, and he was out of town for that.
Okay.
And plus he wanted to really spend time with it and have the vocal on the record.
Yeah.
So it just made sense for him to kind of wait until it was done and really sounding like his part was the last thing.
Yeah.
So he spent a lot of time on it, apparently. I wasn't there, but.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, I mean, he doesn't go in and just do, okay, well, that's good enough. I'm Derek Trucks. You know, I mean, he really takes a lot of pride. And if he says he wants to do something, he wants to do it to the best of his ability. And, you know, that's not always the case. So that's really, really cool. But, yeah, I mean, what he, his solo is and everything he did on that is just like brilliant.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
It's brilliant.
What about your singing on that record? Did you cut live vocals or did you overdub everything? Like you haven't been singing that long, I guess, really. So like, is that something that you're comfortable with or are you still learning?
I'm probably a lot more comfortable with it now than I was during making the record.
Yeah.
And I was more, you know, you kind of learn that, like, you know, when you're going in there to cut the vocal and you get in the booth and it's like, okay, here we go. I got to do it. Like, it's kind of like, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Just be cool. Like, you don't have to push. So you don't have to do as much as you think to make it sound good, you know? So, I sang live, but I mean, I went back and spent some time on the vocals. I wanted to get the vocals to where they were, I mean, there's some stuff that I definitely may have used some live lines, but I mean, we went back in and did some takes on everything to get it right.
It sounds great. Like it sounds really confident and yeah.
Well, that's good.
It's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's something new to learn every day about.
No doubt.
Not only singing, guitar playing too, songwriting. I mean, there's just so much to be learned, and you know, I just try to be thankful that I'm halfway decent at any of it, you know, because I don't know what I would do if I wasn't. But
what about the one with Nikki Bloom? She lives down the street here.
Oh yeah, Nikki's fantastic.
Was that like a co-write with her, or did you just bring her in because you thought she'd be great?
That was a tune that Johnny had, and he had worked on it with. He had brought an idea into Stahl, and then they brought it to me, and then we finished it all together. And we all felt like it needed, we kind of wanted a Graham Parsons, Emmylou Harris thing on it. And I had a couple people that I was thinking of, and I honestly don't even know if I had met her when I asked her to do it. I don't know if I had met her yet, but I was just about to do a show with her, and she was, and I think I asked her when she was at the show, and she was like, yeah, send it to me. And so, yeah, she just, added her magic to it, and it really, really helped out a lot.
She's great.
Yeah.
The record's out. what's the touring world like for you right now? Are you guys going full tilt, or are you taking it easy, or what's your vibe?
We just finished our summer tour. We were out for a lot of July, and then we just did a couple of weeks in August, and then we hit the road supporting the record in October. So we're really excited about that. We're doing a lot of shows with our friends Cordovas, who they're a really, really great band.
Do you play their festival is it Mexico where they do that?
Todos, yeah. I've been down there. I haven't been to the actual festival.
Yeah.
But I've gone down there and hung and done some other gigs with them, okay. Because they just play gigs regularly during that time of year there. So, so that was really good. And then we're doing October with them. And so that can all be found at DwayneBetts.com. And just trying to get the music out to people. I mean, that's really the most important thing, is just to, just leave no stone left unturned when it comes to getting the music out. I mean, you just hope that it finds its way into people's hands, and to their listening regimen, if you will, and that they enjoy it.
Do you have other you've always had so many other projects on the go? Are any of those I think the Allman Family Revival, like that whole thing, sort of like that's like a once a year kind of thing, maybe?
Yeah,
or something?
That's an annual thing. So in September, I'm actually doing about 2.5 weeks with Oteil and friends.
Okay.
So I'm playing in his band with, Melvin Seals, Steve Kimmock, Lamar Williams Jr.
Oh man, that'll be amazing.
Johnny Hammock, Jason Crosby. I mean, that's going to be a really fun time. So we're looking forward to that. So I'm doing.
What tunes do you play for that? Like, what's the material?
A little bit of everything. Some of Oteil's stuff. Some Allman Brothers stuff. Some Dead stuff. Jerry Garcia stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he's pretty big on letting the people in there. Like I've been doing one of mine.
Yeah.
So we'll do one or two of mine. So I'm looking forward to that. And then in late November, the Allman Betts Family Revival, we have both names in it this year, as it's kind of a tribute to both of our dads. And, started out as a tribute to Greg. Devin started it when his father passed away. And, now that we're 7 years into it, and, we're up there playing a lot of my dad's songs too, and my dad's getting older. So we both felt like it was appropriate to put that name and make it a tribute to him as well for his,
it is appropriate,
his body of work. And so that starts in St. Louis on, I want to say November 26th or 27th, like right after Thanksgiving. And that runs about three weeks. So that's the rest of the year. It's not done by a long shot.
Yeah, man, no doubt. Does Dickie ever come out to those shows and like sit in with you guys, or?
Not now. He sat in with us in 2018, I believe, on New Year's Eve, but he hasn't been playing. So he's more or less just chilling and, enjoying retirement and, but he might come to the show and sit side stage. You never know. So that's not out of the question.
But he's essentially like he's packed it in. He's not going to be touring anytime or anything. Like
he's not touring.
One last question about the record. What's the first song called? I just remembered this. I wanted to ask you about it.
Evergreen.
So the acoustic that you're playing on that, it sounds like insanely similar to the Jessica acoustic guitar. That's not the same guitar, is it?
Mm-mm.
Okay. No. It's just you playing it, and it sounds kind of like your dad playing it.
Yeah,
It's weird that like a strummed acoustic guitar can be like, holy shit, that sounds like Dickie Betts. But it really does.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know how to get it rolling, But that's just kind of one of those A, key of A roller. I mean, there's other songs that have, that have.
I know,
that.
but if I like learned it note for note, it wouldn't sound like that. But it, when you play it,
yeah,
it sounds,
yeah, no, you got to play it. Well, that guitar is a really great sounding guitar, but that's not the one that we used on Jessica. Okay. That song also kind of has a New York, you know, Ryan Adams, New York thing. But
it's just those first few bars where I'm just like, oh my god, that sounds like the same guitar.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean it's. It was fun playing that track because it's at a fast tempo and you got to really dig in and get it going, you know? And it's, yeah. I was really proud of some of my acoustic guitar strumming on the record. It's kind of like really, you know, I was like, man, I killed that. I was really feeling myself after this.
It's very satisfying, isn't it?
Yeah. It's good.
I've kept you long enough and I know you got to run, but thanks for doing this. Are you guys going to be playing Nashville with any of your projects? And then,
yeah, we're playing. Yes. In October, we will be at the, Basement East, I believe, us and Cordova's.
Wicked. Yeah. That's like
Dwayne Betts and Palmetto Motel, which is what I call my, my live outfit and Cordova's. Yeah. We'll be playing. I don't have the date right in front of me, but
I'll find it. That's like five blocks down the street.
And then the Almond Betts Family Revival will be at the Ryman.
Oh, wicked. Well,
and then we're playing Nash on the same tour. The Almond Betts Family Revival will be in Nashville, Indiana too.
Both Nashvilles.
But that's not close.
All right. Well, I'm going to come to the Basement East show. That's just down the street.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Spread the word. We want to pack it. So. Come on out and bring your friends.
I will do that. All right. Well, thanks so much for spending the time today, and we'll see you around.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
All right, man. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening, everybody. Music Makers and Soul Shakers podcast is produced at the Hen House Studio in East Nashville, Tennessee. Please remember to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. You can find more info on this episode, including show notes and an audio playlist for Spotify and Apple Music at makersandshakerspodcast.com. Thank you again to our sponsors this season, Union Tube and Transistor, Spectra 1964, The Deering Banjo Company, Mule Resonator Guitars, and The Hen House Hang. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another chilling episode of Music Makers and Soul Shakers. Over and out.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.